Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time once again for another episode of Health Talks with Dr. Trin. The one show, maybe the only show, that shows you a path forward through all the noise and confusion and chaos that surrounds us these days anytime we talk about health with the man who's never confused, Dr. Trin. Welcome, sir. Are you ever confused? You're never confused by anything.
I'm confused on a daily basis. Yes, I am bringing to you a very good friend today, Steve Wilburn. First and foremost, he is decorated Marine Corps veteran.
Gotta love that.
Thank
welcome,
you for
sir.
Your service, Steve.
Thank you for your service. Yeah, right.
You're more welcome.
Yes, and we're gonna chat today on what Steve is up to with Verde Watts.
Verde Watts. What the heck in the world is Verde Watts?
Verde, Espanol for green, of course.
Right.
Watts is the way to measure a unit of energy. So hence the name Verde. Watts, we're in renewables, so green watts.
Green watts. And you were on one of our shows before, weren't you? You were talking about this? It seems like, or am I fantasizing here?
Well, at my age, sometimes memory escapes me. So Iggy's been working with me on that on another program. But yes, we were on before.
Yeah. All right. So remind us again how you started this thing and what got you a decorated Marine vet to get into green energy here.
Well, Marine Corps symbol is green. We have some nicknames for it. We won't mention on this particular family type program, but since my Marine Corps days, going to school and then a variety of different positions, all in the area of either energy or water resources, water cleanup. So over 35 years of experience led me to understand a little bit, hopefully, about energy, how it's created, how it's used, how it's distributed, and the various causal factors for pollution that come out of a power plant. And they are quite significant. And over time, we generated a way of minimizing those impacts. And how I formed Verde Watts was after my wife had passed away and I had 4 years taking care of her with her terminal melanoma cancer. I was doing a lot of research, occupying my time while she was either resting or undergoing chemo. I developed a number of ideas or concepts, and those eventually led to the formation of Verde Watts. And now we're fully commercialized and implementing these technologies around the globe.
Okay. And last couple of questions, and we'll look Dr. Trin back in here. What are the technologies? So you're using green energy. What the heck are you doing and where are you doing it?
Most people interact with green or understand green in the form of solar. Most of us have seen solar panels, either in our own roofs or around town or surely on TV. We're inundated with these types of commercials about going green with solar. So solar is something that we do well. We understand it, but that's not our primary focus when we look at Verde Watts. It's really the ability to take resources that are difficult to handle. Most people don't want to deal with them. These are waste products. We throw away tons and tons and tons of organic material every day, and we used to stuff that in the landfills and then pollute the water table in the air as a result of the breakdown of those materials in a landfill, primarily in the form of methane and carbon dioxide.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but they actually have to drill wells into these giant landfills to release this gas. Otherwise, it builds up, it could explode, it could start underground fires, all sorts of crazy stuff here.
Absolutely. You're very well attuned to the problem. And the solution to the problem is to drill the wells, collect this gas. And the only thing the EPA required here in the United States was that it be collected and burned. Flare, which causes additional toxic pollutions to be emitted. What we did is we came up with a patented approach that actually takes the carbon dioxide that's entrained along with the methane. Sorry for the chemistry 101 here for those that aren't adverse, but methane you would know as a natural gas, pretty much.
Methane is what cows give off, isn't it?
It's pretty much you get cow flatulence. Our human flatulence for methane.
Exactly.
But the point is that this methane and carbon dioxide is a pollutant and a problem. So what we did was take the carbon dioxide that's entrained with the methane, and we used the carbon dioxide to actually scrub out all the impurities. We refrigerate the CO2 in a column. The gas comes through the column. The CO2 at a certain temperature reacts, forms droplets, and washes down the column. We call our process a CO2 wash.
You're using the bad stuff, CO2, that we're all scared of in climate change, that's causing greenhouse gas, that's building this stuff up in the atmosphere, trapping the sun as it goes through like a greenhouse and it bounces back up and it's trapped and it doesn't go back out into space here. You're using the CO2 that we're all so scared of to do what? To somehow clean this stuff?
Take out all the pollutants. Entrained with the gas or all the toxic carcinogenic type compounds, you're looking at a primordial ooze when you look at a landfill.
Yeah.
Whatever we throw in there that can gasify, bug sprays, household cleaners,
tampons,
carbon dioxide, most people look at it in a fearful way.
Yeah.
We looked on it as a beneficial compound that was already there in abundance. And if we use that beneficially at least one more time, then you've taken one step away from the pollution cycle. But CO2, you would also know as dry ice. CO2 is used in carbonated beverages, Diet Colas, et cetera, Coca-Colas. So carbon dioxide is a usable commodity. After we're finished with our process, you have food grade CO2.
Food grade? I can eat. I have little CO2 bars. I can eat CO2? No, come on.
You actually do eat CO2 when you consume a beverage.
That's true.
CO2 comes from Coca-Cola, for example.
Right.
And the point is that what we try to do at Verde Watts is take a look at what is a natural pathway. We don't want to introduce additional chemicals or additional types of toxic materials in our cleanup. So we use naturally occurring chemicals and compounds. We are able to create pipeline quality methane, which we did in Brazil, from the largest polluted landfill on the planet. We captured that gas through the well system, cleaned that gas, drilled a pipeline underneath the bay where they held the Olympics, the water, and we went to a refinery of Petrobras, and we displaced other fuels and other materials they were using to refine oil. And as a result, we really improved the carbon footprint of the whole region.
I'm wrapping my head around this. I'm going to throw it back to the only man who understands it in the room, Dr. Trin here, who's nodding knowingly like he gets the whole thing. And we're all scratching our heads wondering how you take a landfill and turn it into usable fuel.
Yes, that's the only thing I got. Our thief is taking trash and making fuel out of that trash.
Yeah.
We actually do it in a variety of different ways. We talked about the gaseous way. But we even like to eliminate landfills entirely. We have a technology where we take and process the organic waste, separate it from the recyclables, take the organic content, dry it through a process, and make what's called refuse-derived fuel. These are pellets that have energy caloric value, and we displace coal. So this can easily be a drop-in fuel supplement and replacement for polluting power plants. And that way, we don't go to the landfill. We don't put this in Mother Earth. We don't contaminate the water table or the air. We don't create those methane and CO2 issues to deal with. So we basically use that organic as a fuel. We can also gasify it, Biggie, as you know, in what's called an anaerobic digester. Anaerobic means in the absence of oxygen. So it's sealed. And during this process, bugs, we call them bacteria, beneficially eat this particular and consume the organics, leave behind a digestate that can be used as fertilizer. But more important, they create methane and CO2 again. And we can clean those and use those as pipeline quality gas.
So these bugs, just like cows, eat something and then spit out methane and CO2 just like we do or a cow does or anybody else does when it eats stuff.
Yeah, basically, it's bug flatulence. When they breathe in, they breathe out CO2.
Right.
And the digestate would be the excrement, and that is the basis for the fertilizer. The dead carcasses for the bacteria creates a digestate that's used as a fertilizer.
So, Dr. Trin, what does bug poop, bug flatulence. There's another word my grandson would love to use here.
I'm learning so much about Steve's company here. All I heard so far is trash and bug fart.
That's the word we're looking for, bug and fart.
Somehow he's going to change the world with this.
Well, basically, those are the chemical processes that we have. We're a diverse company. We have a health unit. We have an energy generation unit. I also have a patent that's just recently been commercialized in light fidelity, Li-Fi. People know about Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
It's a radio frequency. And we're using that today, actually, some of us,
right,
to tune into the internet. But Li-Fi is the ability to communicate over light. And right now we're doing that in the infrared spectrum.
To communicate over light. Oh, wait. We got to stop on that one again here.
Yeah, no problem.
Now, you're just casually telling me all these mind-boggling. I've suddenly taken a trip 100 years into the future where trash is used to fuel things, where landfills are good things and not bad things, where CO2 is used to scrub methane and turn it into giant farts or used to fuel the planet here. And by the way, we're going to use light to transmit data here. Come on. Yes.
Wow. Tell us about that.
Well, that's one of the reasons I don't sleep. People know that. If you follow me, I get my 3 to 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
Now, but Li-Fi is basically the cutting edge. I came across this because there were some issues, and Doc maybe knows these, in certain medical environments and certain other environments, radio frequencies cause interference.
Sure.
And they can cause issues.
So that's why you're not supposed to use your cell phone in the hospital, because it interferes with all this other technology that's in there.
Absolutely correct. So the challenge was to use light. And I looked at the fluorescent tubes and I looked at other pathways that were already there. And I said, what if I were to design a system that is able to use the existing fixtures, modify them, if you will, and come up with a way to communicate with them through the light spectrum? And I was able to do that. It took about 4.5 years to get through the patent process, but we have a solid patent, and we now are commercializing that in the following area, which is near the Iggy's Heart, and that is the mobile health clinics, so that we're able to use the light sources in there specifically designed to also communicate data from the devices within a patient, within the doctor's ability, ultrasound devices, et cetera. All of this data is transmitted over a large Li-Fi system.
All right. How does all this fit into health? Well, talk about these health clinics that you're doing here. You were doing something in Nigeria before we went on the air here. We're getting ready to go, well, hang on, I'm talking to Nigeria over here, and he's doing something.
Yeah, sorry. We are a global company. I spent 2 years on the Export-Import Bank Board of Advisors.
Wow.
To find ways to bring our technology to the world. I was passionate about health. As a father, grandfather, and now a great-grandfather,
congrats,
I care very much about children and their health. And I don't look just to my children and my family. I look to all families. And when you look around the world, there's a lot of serious issues. One of the things that I could touch was mobile health clinics, bringing health services, clean water, and health services to remote areas. What I do is create an infrastructure or a space for professionals like Doc Eby and others to be able to do their job in remote areas. And Iggy doesn't even have to be there. We have telemedicine. We basically transmit signals. We have arrays, satellite links for these mobile clinics. They go to remote villages. They're able to set up the surgeons and physicians who are advising the nurse practitioner who happens to be in the clinic dealing with these issues. They're able to control the cameras. They can do their own observation of the patient.
So they can robotically move the camera around, say, wait, get a little over to the left there. Let me see under that tongue there. Okay.
Absolutely. We give them the control. When we go into these areas, often we find no power.
Yeah.
There's dirty water.
Right.
So we're able to take seawater, brackish water, well water, clean that in the clinic to injection grade water if need be, potable water for sure for treating the patient, hand washing, sanitizing. But we're also able to create IV water and demineralized water if need be.
It's a mobile clinic. Does it roll on wheels, or is it something you drive?
In order to get the clinic to actually be able to be mobile, we worked with a very fine trailer company. There's so many genius people here in the United States. I was able to co-op another father who owns a big Western company that makes trailers to haul shipping containers around. Mm-hmm. The mobile clinic is designed inside a shipping container. And why we picked a shipping container, they're robust, they're strong, they can be conveyed. People understand how to move shipping containers around.
Right.
So there's a whole infrastructure in place that basically we tapped into. The inside is pristine. The inside is just as if you were to have any type of a medical room, emergency room treatment. So they're transported on a special trailer. It basically get operated by one person. They can tilt up, tilt down. They can discharge the clinic if need be, drive away and leave it there. It's self-contained. It has power generation, including solar and batteries. And they can come back and pick it up later. Or we have ADA-assisted ramps where you leave it on the trailer and people can access the clinic as it's still on the trailer.
So the solar panels are on top of these shipping containers to
power it. Right.
Yeah, to augment the power. We also have propane generators. And also I have another patent, license patent, that we use the truck's engine. We take the power takeoff from the truck's engine and generate power so we can recharge batteries, run lights. So we have multiple pathways to energy in case the grid is not available where we end up.
Is that the same way that regenerative braking, they take the braking of cars and they use that to repower the battery somehow here?
That could be used. We don't use that particular technology because most of ours is going from point A to point B. So there's not a lot of driving around
right.
the clinic, if you would. It generally has a dedicated pathway from a regional hospital for the clinic. We designed it so that in the case of Nigeria, the state of Benue University Teaching Hospital is the place that where it's staffed, it's conditioned for the purpose intended. If they're going to do vaccinations, we have a cold chain custody tracking system so that the vaccines delivered from the hospital end up in the patient's arm at the right temperature and control.
Because that's the big deal with COVID. I know it's not true with the Johnson & Johnson one. That's what's so revolutionary is that we talked about before. But the Moderna and the Pfizer and some of these others need to be really cold. And you don't have refrigeration in the middle of Nigeria. You don't have the refrigeration in the middle of Montana.
He does. Steve does.
Steve does.
We've worked with Thermo Scientific. We've been at this a while. We work with Thermo Scientific and a company called Sonicube. Thermo Scientific, you saw them with the rollout when President Trump announced the warp speed and how these vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna, which needed to be cold, relatively speaking, and needed to be maintained from the factory all the way to the injection point,
right.
which means in your arm. And we monitor the temperature. We take those temperatures and we report them. So you can be assured that that particular vial that came from Pfizer Factory A and went all the way to Nigeria and went to a remote village through our system, our chain of custody, has a verified pathway and temperature reporting system all the way to the injection point.
So let's talk about these mobile clinics again here. How many have you got? Where do you build them? Who pays for them? Who buys them? All this, is it a business just building these dock in a boxes?
Dock in a box. Our predecessor company, where we mean that we looked around to see what the best way to mobilize this business opportunity. We found a gentleman who has done over 200 of these clinics in a can, as he calls them.
Clinic in a can.
Not the most appealing type image, but right. for him it worked. And
I'll stick with dock in a box. I'll take credit for that one here.
I like dock in a box. We're okay with that.
Right.
You know, we can have the featured there.
He's the dock in the box. Right.
As the dock in the box. No, it's really what we're trying to do. We want to keep it simple. All these pathways, all of these various controls, these are very difficult for the common person who's not used to technical issues or semantics to understand. Let's keep it simple. Dock in a box.
Right.
When you go there, It's the same as if you were walking into a UCI clinic and you wanted to go in there because you had a cold and you wanted to be seen by a physician. You can have that same kind of experience anywhere on this planet as a result of the technology that we put together. Who buys it? We right now are working with government agencies, regional hospitals like we spoke about, to put in a health infrastructure. I'm working with the World Health Organization. I'm working through USAID. I'm working through any way I can to get this doc in the box, as you call it. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to take credit for that. Okay, all right.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll give you a little credit on it. We'll definitely do that. Not a problem. The experience then, what we're trying to create, is make sure that it's available. There's Winnebago bands here in the United States, I call them. There's very fancy rigs that are out there doing mobile vaccinations and mobile dock in the box, if you would. So this is not a new concept, but the problem with those is they're very fragile. You can't take those on a mud road in Nigeria, for example, where there's very little infrastructure. These devices that we have here in the United States and clinics are designed for our country, our roads, our power infrastructure.
Yeah, right.
So that's why we go with the shipping containers.
It makes so much sense. You can put a shipping container on it. You can drive it to a port, load it on a big boat, float it anywhere. The crane takes it off, puts it on the back of a truck. The truck hauls it somewhere. We're familiar with that technology. It works anywhere and everywhere, and it's rugged.
I ship things all over the world. I build power plants, and we ship massive amounts of equipment to Brazil while we were building that landfill project that we spoke about earlier. That took 14 major cargo transports to take 6 acres of equipment and steel down to Brazil.
Wow, 6 acres of equipment. You're blowing my mind casually one moment to the next here about, oh, I can do this and I can do this and I can do this.
How do we help the poorest of the poor with your technology?
Yeah.
And what countries have you identified to put a dock in the box in?
Right.
Right now, we're involved in an initiative in Africa. Africa was put on my heart. They basically found me on the internet and asked if I would please help them with clean water. We started it. We are now sending some of my clean water units to remote villages at my charity's expense to ensure that these villages have clean drinking water. So that was really the start of it. And then when we looked at the health issues that surrounded the water and I became more educated, the pandemic hit. And that really brought it home to me. I got to do something and I need to do it now. So we accelerated a lot of our development. And I reached out and found people like you, Doc, and others to advise me. And then we created the platform. So Africa, right now we're active in Latin America. We're active in Chile and Argentina. We're active in Nigeria, Ghana, Sierra Leone. I probably have left out one or two, and I apologize.
Both sides of the continent here. Sierra Leone's on one side. Nigeria's kind of farther south. And
what the people in the country, they have an infrastructure. There's very bright, brilliant doctors and scientists within these countries. People that are patriots that maybe have been educated in the United States and could have made a lot more money staying here in the U.S., but they've gone home to help their people. Those are the people I want to work with. I'm a patriot in my own country. I want to deal with patriots and people with a passion who love their particular country and the citizens of their nation.
We got to get it to Vietnam when you go up into the highlands there. We got to get some dock in the boxes up there.
I've been to Vietnam on the missions with Tung Out and 7 Day Heroes, and that's a whole nother show to tell you about that emotional epiphany that I went through drinking in a bar in Hanoi with another wounded veteran, the enemy. But that's a story for another day.
I think you should come back and tell the story because I don't think it gets told enough.
It's a good story.
Yeah, that whole a veteran who fought against the enemy, the Vietnamese were trying to kill them, and now they're going back and hugging and embracing and trying to help them. Even the emotional stories from the 90s or whenever we reopened a thing of people like John McCain going back who'd been tortured in these prisons and going back and confronting the people who held him captive. It's a great closing of the circle.
On that tour, I was invited by the Vietnamese government to go to see the Hanoi Hilton.
Yeah.
No way. I'm going to go there.
No, I can.
Picture taken around that bullshit.
Right.
Excuse my language.
No, no, that's okay. We used fart earlier, so that's okay. All games are off here.
Sorry. And alcohol was involved in my peaceful transition with my life. Otherwise, I don't think that would have been quite the emotional scene.
I don't know how you go back and heal those wounds and close that circle and regain that connection. But that would be a fascinating story. But I want to stay on when you're just jumping all over the place with wild stories here.
ADD,
Oh, my goodness. So I still want to focus on this health clinic stuff here.
Yes, sir.
All right. Yes. So you've got these health clinics. They're self-sufficient. How do you get water? We've done lots of shows on clean water. I don't think people listening today realize that more people have access to a smartphone in Africa or Asia than they do to clean water. Smartphones are in the smallest villages. There, it's a cheap thing to do, and there's Wi-Fi connections all over the place, apparently, or whatever. And you can buy these cheap little plans and these cheap little phones, and you go to the poorest, most rural areas, and you'll find smartphones there. But you may not find a well with clean water. Have you ever talked to Nick Jordan from Wells of Life? If not, we should have him on the show sometime. He's been on numerous times on our station. He created from Orange County, fell in love through a series of accidents, building a water well in Africa, and now he's turned his life upside down, and that's all he does is run this charity. They do it in Uganda. They focus on one country, and they've dug thousands of wells. They raise money, $6,000 apparently buys you a well, and then they try and maintain it and run it, and that one well provides clean water for, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years for a village of hundreds or thousands here.
Well, it's capable of providing clean water. My only issues there, and I'd like to talk to the gentleman, is that it depends on the source of the water. You can drill a well and you can access water. Whether that water is truly healthy or not, that remains to be seen.
Well, and as they talk about on that show, and again, it's the image of the stories. Okay, so there's water. Why don't they drill themselves? Well, they don't have the equipment. The water's under. There's a water table down there, but they can't just use hand shovels to go down and did it like they've done for centuries. So you got to go a little deeper, and you got to have a way to pump it up, and you got a way to maintain it. These wells break, and as you said, they're still polluted or rusty or other sorts of things you can do wrong with it. And then it's a question of teaching people what to do with clean water, because they don't have bathrooms, and they just rinse their hands and go to the bathroom. It's a massive problem beyond just getting them drinking water, but that's the start. And then the other thing he talks about, and I'll shut up here, is that women spend all day trying to go walk miles with gasoline cans on their heads or shoulders to bring home the water to cook and bathe with, because it's not in their village. They got to walk hours a day collecting this water and bringing it home, which means they can't go to school or they can't do anything else. It's a form of a domestic servitude here.
Instead of having a pipeline, an interconnected water pipeline, the women and children are the pipeline.
Yeah, exactly. So it's mind-boggling, this water issue. And I'm not the only one. Matt Damon has a charity he supports, I think, that they talk about it, drilling wells. A lot of people have starting to do this. You're trying to find other ways to do this other than drilling a well. You're trying to take contaminated water and turn it into potable, drinkable water.
There's brackish water, there's pond water, there's seawater, there's waters everywhere. What we want to do, though, you hit upon something else, and I want to touch upon that. The jugs, the containers.
Right.
You can have the cleanest water coming from this well gushing out and have the most contaminated vessel to carry it back to the person. So what we've designed is a system. It basically, you come to the site, you put our design jug into the apparatus. We put ozone in there in ultraviolet light, cleanse that particular vessel.
Right.
Then the vessel is filled, the door opens, they take the jug out, and they go home with a clean jug full of clean water.
Amazing.
Because without that interface, all the good work that's done by your guest that you spoke of, drilling these great wells and making clean water available, if it's contaminated before it's used, what good have we done?
Exactly. We take for granted that we turn on the tap and water comes out.
Yeah.
And yet for much of the world, that doesn't happen. And if it does, it's contaminated. The groundwater is contaminated because there are no isolated sanitation systems and sewers. Right. So everything's just human waste and animal waste seeping into the water and contaminating it with bugs and everything. And then even if we get the water up, it might be contaminated. Hopefully it's been filtered as it goes through the Mother Earth, through the rocks and the soil and everything else to get all of that out. But then you get the water out. What do you do with it? You still got to move it around. You still got to make it available. And you still got to keep it safe at every stage of the process. Yeah.
So does this dock-in-the-box e-mobile clinic have what it takes to make water.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was getting at, right?
We can take the most horrific types of water that one could imagine and create drinking water. We're able to do that. We can go from several hundred gallons up to around 3,000 gallons a day is about the limit.
But you could take bad water, brackish water, pond water, scum water, water sitting in the street or sitting in a pond or a pool or whatever, and you can turn it into drinkable, potable, as they say, water at that rate.
Yes, we do.
So the question I have, and I know others have, is how the heck do you pay for all this stuff here? Is there a foundation, a fund, grants, research? What the heck is funding all this massive work that you're doing on so many different areas?
It all starts with my wallet first, because before I ask other people for money, I want to make sure that what I'm offering works. And I found that the best way to do that is my wife and my family sometimes question my sanity.
I'll bet. Hey, Dad, can we get a new car? No, we're developing a clean water system.
Well, that's exactly it. You know? I want the proof of concept to be there. I want the commercialization to be there. So now what I am doing is all the political contacts that I've had. I've been on a lot of foundations, a lot of boards, a lot of senior positions within the government of the United States as an advisor. I'm going back to those same politicians. Now I do have my hand out. I want grants. I want financing to enable us to export these. It's easier for me to use the Export-Import Bank of the United States than it is to use Wells Fargo in my own country.
Really?
I'd like to do this in West Virginia, in any place in the United States, but I can't get money for that, okay? Nigeria, I can get USAID, I can get World Health Organization grants and funding, and the United States Export-Import Bank if there's a sovereign involved. I do have a charity, Open Hearts for Purple Hearts, and this is primarily to help Gold Star families. It's not set up to fund water treatment projects. It was put on my heart by my wife who passed away from melanoma, and I kept this idea alive. We did it in very small ways. Living Waters for Children. Pamela, whom I was widowed from, was someone who brought me to faith, and with her tenacious desire to help children, she loved children. So Living Waters for Children Foundation is for Pamela. And we just started this and we'll be rolling that out in the next few weeks. And I'd love to meet the gentleman drilling the wells in Uganda.
Yeah, he's literally raised money and drilled thousands of wells. I'd be happy to, he's got
a... Yeah, we need to link up, it sounds like, because there's some synergies here. And again, I'm not a fundraiser kind of guy. We need people that are much more able to communicate quickly and lucidly.
That's been Nick's talent. We'll get him on the show here. He's a very passionate Irishman who had, he was some big mortgage broker or something.
Awesome.
And he turned his whole business upside, went through a divorce and went to Africa to sort of find himself and found this passion, came back, changed his whole life. Getting rid of my business, everything else. I'm going to start a foundation, a charity. People said, you're nuts. You're going to give up a big six-figure income to do what? To go around and drill wells for people who can't pay you? And he's like, yes. And he has built a giant foundation. He works with the Diocese of Orange and several other organizations and big celebrities and people on his board. He's built from nothing this thing that builds thousands of wells a year and funds it somehow. The whatever the millions of dollars it costs to do this, he raises that money and keeps it alive. He's a committed Christian, and he just keeps thinking God will find a way here. But oh my God, sometimes you must wonder, where are you, God? We need money tomorrow or something for this here.
When I go to Congress, I've testified before Congress a number of times on various issues. And what I'm doing now, what God put on my heart, is to shame the people that need to be shamed.
Yeah,
we got to use this resources that we have, some of these rainbows, as I call them, and we need to look at the basic infrastructure and provide the basic needs for the poorest of the poor. They're the ones left behind.
Yeah.
They're the ones suffering. I can go out and live in different places. I can move. I can find the infrastructure that I want in the environment I want. Most of the people on this planet cannot. They are there. They're stuck. They're trapped. And we need to help them. And we need to give them the step up. And then get the hell out of their way. Because the people I'm dealing with, a lot of them are so bright. They just need the basics. We give them a little water, clean, that they can hydrate themselves. We give them some light to read by, and we haven't gotten into that. We actually, as part of our outreach, when we go to these villages, we take small solar lanterns and we give those out to the kids. Wow. And they're not designed to light up a whole room, but they can create an adequate reading lamp for them to do their studies by. And Bill Gates Foundation and others are doing these reading programs. So what we're trying to do is give a little bit of light and a little bit of water, the basics.
Is that a lot to ask? A little bit of light and a little bit of water and a dock in a box that we can drop in your backyard and help you out?
That's it. I can get my arms around that and get my, I can control, if you would, that.
Yeah.
I mean, I can produce that kind of experience. I don't need big governments in my way. I never took a dime from the government to put this together. And I'm proud of that in a way, because I don't want to be obligated
right.
to this kind of bureaucracy. So we circumvent that and we just go direct to the source. And guess what? Those people figure it out. It's the Benue Medical University Hospital that is the pole. I don't even have to push anymore.
Well, that's what Nick always says. It's people to people. Nick's a very conservative guy. I don't say that we agree all the time on politics. I'm more of an old hippie myself here. But he and I agree on one thing. Just get out of the way and help people. Well, Dr. Trinh has been following today here. What can I let? I've taken over trying to lead this. I'm sorry. This is just so hard to focus. There's so many things, so many different moving parts that are all interconnected.
Lots of moving parts. There's so much going on in Steve's brain we're trying to pull out here.
Yeah, right. What do you think about people like, you remind me of, I don't know if you're a billionaire like Bill Gates and Elon Musk, but we had on one of our shows, Toby Corey, who used to be the president of Tesla. He came out of the solar division and Solar City. He ran Solar City. And then when Elon Musk bought them out, he became president for a while, the whole enterprise. And he said, this guy thinks at a speed and pace and on a plane that none of us can imagine, even bright people. He's been a man who can connect boring holes. He has created boring machines and he's going rockets to Mars. Like, this is really going to happen, folks. This isn't just fool around. And of course, I'm going to build an electric car when nobody's built a new car in 100 years. I'm going to do all of these things at once here. And somehow in his mind, it all connects. You remind me of that same sort of personality type here.
Yes.
Some of us have certain gifts. It's more of a that I'm able to utilize what is already existing and implement my solution, impose my will on it.
Impose your will. I'm not going to accept that this can't be done. I'm going to find a way.
Exactly. I'm not going to stop. So if I really am committed to something and I have a passion about it, those that know me know that he's not going to stop. Might as well give in because he knows where he's going. And I'm putting my resources, I'm putting myself, my physicality behind it. I'm putting whatever capital resources I have behind it. So I'm all in.
Is there a team that you build then? That's what Toby Corey said. The biggest problem was trying to corral Elon Musk. He wants to go in 50 directions all at once. And we got to say, Elon, let's focus on this one. Let's get this one done. I know you're boring a hole and going to Mars and all these things. Let's pick a couple and focus on them here, buddy.
It's called silos in my company.
Yeah,
right. What I do is I get a bright person who understands that particular mission. I handle all the vision statements. We don't need
We don't need more visionaries. So no, please.
We got the vision thing down. Then we have to get into the mission and the implementation of the mission. Fortunately, I'm able to attract into my network the kind of bright, capable people. I was VP of Business Development for Allied Signal Corporation.
Big company.
I had over 400 employees at one time underneath me. So I do know how to delegate. And delegation is probably the biggest tool for someone like Musk and others like myself. You must learn to delegate. And then you've got to trust. We use the word trust and verify. I still stick my hand in there and find out what's going on.
Yeah, right.
But you got to trust your executives to implement the vision.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, many people like, and this was supposedly Steve Jobs, I'll get into every detail of everything. Steve, we got this covered. Go figure out the big vision here. You don't need to be futzing around with the, but that doesn't feel right. It doesn't look right. I got to smooth this edge on it. Steve, there's better uses of your time than figuring out that stuff here.
It takes a while to get that kind of discipline. And I'm not perfect at it, but at the age that I'm at now, after 7 decades on the planet, I finally realized that I have limits.
Your wife is probably smiling from somewhere saying, finally, he got it here. There's limits to this thing here.
Yeah. A man's got to know his limitations. Otherwise, they're painfully pointed out to him. I use the Clint Eastwood thing, and I add that they're painfully pointed out to you.
Right.
So I take the limitations that I have. Also, somebody asked me the other day, hey, Steve, by the time you get all this done, you're not going to be here.
Right.
I said, oh, yes, I will. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because our ideas and what we've created here hopefully have some longevity to them. So I don't worry about how many days I have, or how many weeks, months. No one knows that.
Right.
But no one has that assurance. But what I do have the assurance of, I know when I get up in the morning what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to do my best to accomplish what I need to get accomplished, for I call them the poorest of the poor. The poorest of the poor have nobody, they have no champions, okay? Who's the champion of the poor?
Nobody.
No. Jesus Christ is the champion of the poor, if you will.
Right.
And there's other religious pathways that I don't want to get into all of those things. But the nuance to me is this, if not me, who?
And you know what I always say, we've talked about this show, we've had other charities come on, because they don't have a voice. I hear people talk on their behalf about them, the homeless, but they don't come on and stand up and say, I'm homeless and here's what I need. When they do, in certain third world countries, stand up and finally come together, the poor farmers or the Indians, they can create change, but they're voiceless. They're in the shadows. Nobody sees them. They have not only have no power, they have no voice.
If we can do something to handle the basic necessities of life, if I can give them a foundation, if I can give them clean water, a little bit of power, and some health care, to give them a chance, to give them a start. That's as big a vision as I can have. I can talk about Mars. I can talk about drilling wells all over the place.
Right. But
to me, I keep focused on the child, the little child in Africa.
That has his tongue out waiting for somebody to help him, to feed him, to give him a drink, to look inside and give him some of the basic things. Just stick your tongue out. It starts there.
There it is.
Well, I love the analogy. I love the work you're doing. I'd love to have you come back and hear more. And I'd love to meet you sometime. I'd love to pick your brain, see how we could help you here tell these stories, because I can't believe that it's easy to communicate all that. It's hard to get it out in 1 hour. Every time I mention something, you got 12 other projects or things you're working on here too.
No, we do. And I apologize for being disjointed. But the other thing is, if we think about it, your audience thinks about it, pull it out of us. We've got a website.
Yes, that's what I was going to get to. Give us the websites. Where do we start the discussion with you?
You start the discussion with me, steve@verdewatts.com. That's my email.
Spell it. So it's V-E-R-D for green, and then Watts, W-A-T-T.
W-A-T-T-S. Or steve@firmgreen, if that's easier.
Firm Green. That's a different entity, right?
Either one.
Okay. This is so revolutionary, cutting. I feel like I'm watching a TED talk about somebody way out in the future here. I'm watching some futurist conference here, but you're making it happen today.
Steve is like a light year ahead of us, and it's amazing. Steve, when can you come back to share your story?
I'd love to hear the Vietnam story.
Being a veteran, maybe we'll bring you and Jerry Husson back together.
That would be fine. If whatever you would like, it helps other people. The openheartsforpurplehearts.org is some place you can go. The audience is on there, hard to help the wounded and the poor families. That's the way to do it.
And that generation is dying out too. It's my generation. It's the aging baby boomers here who are leaving without telling those stories. What a different time that was. People didn't welcome your service. They spit on you when you came back.
Yeah, I had that experience in Chicago.
And then to try and go back and make sense of what did we do there and why, and can we ever come to a resolution of this? Have we moved past, or it's got to be, I can't imagine how difficult it is to go back and say, okay, once we were enemies, now we'll be friends.
Well, it's the old patent line, let's drink one son of a bitch to the other, the way I dealt with it.
Yeah.
And that's true. That's exactly, there's pictures to prove it. The hatred that I had in my heart, not so much against that particular individual,
but the people.
Race. Right. It was the hate around the emotion of loss. I have a lot of survivor's guilt. I lost a lot of my close friends. I was in very fierce combat. And that type of emotional response, when I had to go back and relive it, without Iggy and the team tongue out in Houston's group, taking me to a leper's colony.
A leper's colony.
Doing those operations to open my eyes to the people of Vietnam. And then from there, it became easier for me to forgive myself, number one, for surviving. I know that sounds weird, but I had to. I survived, they didn't. Real quick little summation. I got pictures of me at the Vietnam Wall a lot. I go into DC a lot.
Yeah.
I never not visit the wall right there.
Probably one of the most moving and yet subtle memorials we've ever built as a nation here. I mean, people cry and weep when they go there in a way they don't when they see the giant statues at other wars or something here.
I used to drink 11 shots to my buddies that were on the wall. Now I drink one shot to all 11. I'm too damn old. But the point is, I remember them. And I remember them differently. I remember them as the 18 and 19-year-olds they were.
Yes.
They don't have arthritis. They don't have a shoulder replacement, a knee replacement, blah, blah, blah. But they're always forever young. So their dreams and passion, I take them on.
There you go.
That's how I get my energy.
Love to hear that show. Love to do a shout out. I guess this is your daughter, Jen Marie. She says, love the work you're doing, Dad. I echo that on behalf of all of us. Please come back, share more of your visions and your stories, that one in particular, and the work with veterans. And then somehow we'll slowly peel the onion back and try and understand what you're doing. It's still, I feel like I'm on a two-dimensional plane and you're talking about three dimensions or four dimensions, and I can't even picture what that looks like here.
Well, when you get there and you know what I'm doing, please tell me.
All right, take us out, Doc.
Thanks so much, guys. Steve, we're bringing you back real soon with, I'm going to text Jerry and see if we can get you both on, and we'd love to hear your story.
Thank you, gentlemen, for the time. Really
okay,
appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, there you have it. One more reason to tune in each and every day, each and every week to Health Talks. You never know exactly where we're going to go, but you're going to like the journey.